real you, the real me. Isn't that what we are now?
Yes. He raised his head, kissed her mouth.
But for how long? I could turn back into him any minute. I couldn't do that to you, to us.
His voice was bitter.
I don't even know how you can stand it, being around this thing that isn't me.
Even if you go back to being that in 5 minutes, she said, it would have been worth it. Just to be with you like this again. Not to have it end on that rooftop.
Because this is you, and even that other you, there's pieces of the real you in there. It's like I'm looking through a blurred window at you. But it's not the real you. And at least I know now.
What do you mean? His hands tightened on her shoulders.
What do you mean, at least you know?
She took a deep breath.
Jace, when we were first together, like really together, you were so happy for that first month, and everything we did together was funny and fun and amazing. And then it was like it just started draining out of you, all that happiness. You didn't want to be with me or look at me. I was afraid I was going to hurt you. I thought I was losing my mind.
You didn't smile or laugh or joke.
And I'm not blaming you. Lilith was creeping into your mind, controlling you, changing you. But you have to remember, I know how stupid this sounds. I never had a boyfriend before. I thought maybe it was normal, that maybe you were just getting tired of me.
I couldn't.
I'm not asking for reassurance, she said. I'm telling you. When you're, like you are, controlled, you seem happy. I came here because I wanted to save you.
Her voice dropped.
But I started to wonder what I was saving you from. How could I bring you back to a life you seemed so unhappy with?
Unhappy? He shook his head.
I was lucky. So, so lucky. And I couldn't see it.
His eyes met hers.
I love you, he said. And you make me happier than I ever thought I could be. And now that I know what it's like to be someone else, to lose myself, I want my life back. My family. You. All of it.
His eyes darkened.
I want it back.
His mouth came down on hers with bruising pressure, their lips open, hot and hungry, and his hands gripped her waist and then the sheets on either side of her, almost tearing them. He pulled back, panting.
We can't. Then quit kissing me, she gasped. In fact,
she ducked out from under his grip, grabbing for her tank top.
I'll be right back.
She pushed past him and darted into the bathroom, locking the door behind her. She flicked on the light and stared at herself in the mirror. She looked wild-eyed, her hair tangled, her lips swollen from kisses. She blushed and pulled her top back on, splashing cold water on her face, twisting her hair back into a knot. When she'd convinced herself she no longer looked like the ravished maiden from the cover of a romance novel, she went for the hand towels. Nothing romantic about that. Grabbing one and wetting it down, then rubbing it with soap. She came back out into the bedroom. Jace was sitting on the edge of the bed, in jeans and a clean, unbuttoned shirt, his tousled hair outlined by moonlight. He looked like a statue of an angel. Only, angels weren't usually streaked with blood. She moved to stand in front of him.
All right. She said. Take off your shirt.
Jace raised his eyebrows.
I'm not going to attack you, she said impatiently. I can take the sight of your naked chest without swooning.
Are you sure? He asked, obediently sliding the shirt off his shoulders.
Because viewing my naked chest has caused many women to seriously injure themselves stampeding to get to me.
Yeah, well. I don't see anyone here but me, and I just want to clean the blood off you. He leaned back obediently on his hands. Blood had soaked through the shirt he'd been wearing and streaked his chest and the flat planes of his stomach. But as she ran her fingers carefully over him, she could feel that most of his cuts were shallow. The arazi he'd put on himself earlier was already causing them to fade. He turned his face up to her, eyes shut, as she ran the damp washcloth over his skin, blood pinking the white cotton. She scrubbed at the dry streaks on his neck, wrung out the cloth, dunked it in the glass of water on the nightstand, and went to work on his chest. He sat with his head tilted back, watching her as the cloth glided over the muscles of his shoulders, the smooth line of arms, forearms, hard chest scarred with white lines, the black of permanent marks.
"Clary," he said.
"Yes?"
The humor had gone from his voice.
"I won't remember this," he said, "when I'm back, like I was, under his control. I won't remember being myself. I won't remember being with you or talking to you like this. So just tell me, are they all right? My family? Do they know what's happened to you? A little, and no, they're not all right."
His eyes closed.
"I could lie to you," she said, "but you should know. I love you so much, and they want you back."
"Not like this," he said.
She touched his shoulder. "Are you going to tell me what happened? How you got these cuts?"
He took a deep breath, and the scar on his chest stood out, livid and dark.
"I killed someone."
She felt the shock of his words go through her body like the recoil of a gun. She dropped the bloody towel, then bent down to retrieve it. When she looked up, he was staring down at her. In the moonlight, the lines of his face were fine and sharp and sad.
"Who?"
she asked.
"You met her," Jace went on,
each word like a weight.
"The woman you went to visit with Sebastian. The Iron Sister, Magdalena."
He twisted away from her and reached back to retrieve something tangled among the blankets of the bed. The muscles in his arms and back moved under the skin as he took hold of it and turned back to Clary, the object gleaming in his hand. It was a clear, glassine chalice, an exact replica of the mortal cup, except that instead of being gold, it was carved of silvery white adamas.
"Sebastian sent him, to get this from her tonight," Jay said. "And he also gave me the order to kill her. She wasn't expecting it. She wasn't expecting any violence, just payment in exchange. She thought we were on the same side. I let her hand me the cup, and then I took my dagger and I..."
He inhaled sharply, as if the memory hurt.
"I stabbed her. I meant it to be through the heart, but she turned and I missed by inches. She staggered back and grabbed for her work table. There was powdered adamas on it. She threw it at me. I think she meant to blind me. I turned my head away, and when I looked back, she had an aegis in her hand. I think I knew what it was. The light of it seared my eyes. I cried out as she drove it toward my chest. I felt a searing pain in the mark, and then the blade shattered."
He looked down and gave a mirthless laugh.
"The funny thing is, if I'd been wearing gear, this wouldn't have happened. I didn't, because I didn't think it would be worth the bother. I didn't think she could hurt me. But the Aegis burned the mark, Lilith's mark, and suddenly I was back in myself, standing there, over this dead woman with a bloody dagger in my hand and the cup in the other. I don't understand. Why did Sebastian tell you to kill her? She was going to give the cup to you, to Sebastian. She said..."
Jace expelled a ragged breath.
"Do you remember what Sebastian said about the clock in the old town square in Prague? That the king had the clockmaker's eyes put out after he made it, so he could never make anything as beautiful again," Clary said. "But I don't see..." Sebastian wanted Magdalena dead so she could never make anything like this again, said Jace. So she could never tell.
Tell what?
She put her hand up, took hold of Jace's chin, and drew his face down so that he was looking at her.
Jace, what is Sebastian really planning on doing? The story he told in the training room about wanting to raise demons so he could destroy them.
Sebastian wants to raise demons, all right. Jace's voice was grim.
One demon in particular.
Lilith.
But Lilith is dead. Simon destroyed her.
Greater demons don't die. Not really. Greater demons inhabit the spaces between worlds, the great void, the emptiness. What Simon did was shatter her power, send her in shreds back to the nothingness she came from. But she'll slowly reform there, be reborn. It would take centuries, but not if Sebastian helps her.
A cold feeling was growing in the pit of Clary's stomach.
Helps her how?
By summoning her back to this world.
He wants to mix her blood and his in the cup and create an army of dark Nephilim. He wants to be Jonathan Shadowhunter reincarnated, but on the side of the demons. Not the angels.
An army of dark Nephilim? The two of you are tough, but you're not exactly an army.
There are about 40 or 50 Nephilim who either were once loyal to Valentine or who hate the current direction of the Glaive and are open to hearing what Sebastian has to say. He's been in contact with them. When he raises Lilith, they'll be there.
Jace took a deep breath.
And after that, with the power of Lilith behind him, who knows who else will join his cause?
He wants a war. He's convinced he'll win it.
And I'm not so sure he won't. For every dark Nephilim he makes, he will grow in power. Add that to the demons he's already made allegiances with, and I don't know if the Glaive is prepared to withstand him.
Clary dropped her hand.
Sebastian never changed. Your blood never changed him. He's exactly like he always was.
Her eyes flicked up to Jace's.
But you lied to me too.
He lied to you.
Her mind was whirling.
I know that Jace isn't you.
He thinks it's for your own good and you'll be happier in the end, but he did lie to you. And I would never do that.
The Aegis, Clary said. If it can hurt you, but Sebastian can't feel it, could it kill him, but not hurt you?
Jace shook his head.
I don't think so. If I had an Aegis, I might be willing to try, but no. Our life forces are tied together. An injury is one thing. If he were to die...
His voice hardened.
You know the easiest way to end this.
Put a dagger in my heart. I'm surprised you didn't do it while I was sleeping.
Could you, if it were me?
Her voice shook.
I believe there is a way to make this right. I still believe it.
Give me your Steely, and I'll make a portal.
You can't make a portal from inside here, said Jace.
It won't work. The only way in and out of this apartment is through the wall downstairs, by the kitchen. It's the only place you can move the apartment from, too.
Can you move us to the Silent City?
If we go back, the Silent Brothers can figure out a way to separate you from Sebastian. We'll tell the Glaive his plan so they'll be prepared.
I could move us to one of the entrances, Jace said,
and I will. I'll go. We'll go together.
But just so there won't be any untruth between us,
Cleary, you have to know they'll kill me. After I tell them what I know, they'll kill me.
Kill you?
No, they wouldn't.
Clary, his voice was gentle.
As a good shadow hunter, I ought to volunteer to die to stop what Sebastian is going to do. As a good shadow hunter, I would.
But none of this is your fault.
Her voice rose, and she forced it back down. Not wanting Sebastian, downstairs, to hear.
can't help what's been done to you. You're a victim in this. It's not you, Jace. It's someone else. Someone wearing your face. You shouldn't be punished. It's not a matter of punishment. It's practicality. Kill me, Sebastian dies. It's no different from sacrificing myself in battle. It's all well and good to say I didn't choose this. It has happened, and what I am now, myself, will be gone again soon enough. And Clary, I know it doesn't make sense, but I remember it. I remember all of it. I remember walking with you in Venice, and that night at the club, and sleeping in this bed with you. And don't you get it? I wanted this. This is all I ever wanted. To live with you like this. Be with you like this. What am I supposed to think when the worst thing that has ever happened to me gives me exactly what I want? Maybe Jace Lightwood can see all the ways this is wrong and messed up, but Jace Wayland, Valentine's son, loves this life. His eyes were wide and gold as he looked at her, and she was reminded of Raziel, of his gaze that seemed to hold all the wisdom and all the sadness in the world. "And that's why I have to go," he said, "before this wears off, before I'm him again." "Go where?" "To the Silent City. I have to turn myself in. And the cup, too." Part 3. All is changed. All changed. Changed utterly. A terrible beauty is born. William Butler Yeats. Easter, 1916. Chapter 18. Raziel. Clary? Simon sat on the back porch steps of the farmhouse, looking down the path that led through the apple orchard and down to the lake. Isabel and Magnus were on the path, Magnus glancing toward the lake and then up at the low mountains ringing the area. He was making notes in a small book with a pen whose end glowed a sparkling blue-green. Alex stood a little distance away, looking up at the trees lining the ridge of the hills that separated the farmhouse from the road. He seemed to be standing as far from Magnus as he could, while remaining in earshot. It seemed to Simon, the first to admit that he was not that observant about these things, that despite the joking around in the car, a perceptible distance had come between Magnus and Alec recently, one he couldn't quite put a finger on, but he knew it was there. Simon's right hand was cradled in his left, his fingers circling the gold ring on his finger. "Clary, please." He'd been trying to reach her every hour since he'd gotten the message from Maya about Luke. He'd gotten nothing, not a flicker of response. "Clary, I'm at the farmhouse. I'm remembering you here, with me." It was an unseasonable warm day, and a faint wind rustled the last of the leaves in the tree branches. After spending too long wondering what sort of clothes you were supposed to wear to meet angels in, a suit seemed excessive, even if he did have one left over from Jocelyn and Luke's engagement party. He was in jeans and a t-shirt, his arms bare in the sunlight. He had so many happy sunlit memories attached to this place, this house. He and Clary had come up here with Jocelyn almost every summer for as long as he could remember. They would swim in the lake, Simon would tan brown, and Clary's fair skin would burn over and over. She'd get a million more freckles on her shoulders and arms. They'd play apple baseball in the orchard, which was messy and fun, and Scrabble and poker in the farmhouse, which Luke always won. "Clary, I'm about to do something stupid and dangerous, and maybe suicidal. Is it so bad I want to talk to you one last time? I'm doing this to keep you safe, and I don't even know if you're alive for me to help you. But if you were dead, I'd know, wouldn't I? I'd feel it."
All right, let's go, Magnus said, appearing at the foot of the steps. He eyed the ring on Simon's hand, but made no comment. Simon stood up and brushed off his jeans, then led the way down the wandering path through the orchard. The lake sparkled up ahead like a cold blue coin. As they neared it, Simon could see the old docks sticking out into the water, where once they had tied up kayaks before a big piece of the dock had broken off and drifted away. He thought he could almost hear the lazy hum of bees and feel the weight of summer on his shoulders. As they reached the lake's edge, he twisted around and looked up at the farmhouse. White painted clapboard with green shutters and an old covered sun porch with tired white wicker furniture on it. You really liked it here, huh? Isabel said. Her black hair snapped like a banner in the breeze off the lake. How can you tell? Your expression, she said, like you're remembering something good. It was good, Simon said. He reached up to push his glasses up his nose, remembered he no longer wore them, and lowered his hand. I was lucky. She looked down at the lake. She was wearing small gold hoop earrings. One was tangled in a bit of her hair, and Simon wanted to reach over and free it, to touch the side of her face with his fingers. And now you're not? He shrugged. He was watching Magnus, who was holding what looked like a long flexible rod and drawing in the wet sand at the lake's edge. He had the spell book open and was chanting as he drew. Alec was watching him, with the expression of someone watching a stranger. Are you scared? Isabel asked, moving slightly closer to Simon. He could feel the warmth of her arm against his. I don't know. So much of being scared is the physical feeling of it. Your heart speeding up, sweating, your pulse racing. I don't get any of that. That's too bad, Isabel murmured, looking at the water. Guys getting all sweaty is hot. He shot her a half smile. It was harder than he thought it would be. Maybe he was scared. That's enough of your sass and back talk, Missy. Isabel's lip quivered as if she were about to smile. Then she sighed. You know what it never even crossed my mind I wanted, she said. A guy who could make me laugh. Simon turned toward her, reaching for her hand, not caring for the moment that her brother was watching. Is he? All right, Magnus called out. I'm done. Simon, over here. They turned. Magnus was standing inside the circle, which was glowing with a faint white light. It was really two circles, a slightly smaller one inside a larger one, and in the space between the circles, dozens of symbols had been scrawled. They too glowed a steely blue white like the reflection off the lake. Simon heard Isabel's soft intake of breath, and he stepped away before he could look at her. It would just make it all harder. He moved forward, over the border of the circle, into its center, beside Magnus. Looking out from the center of the circle was like looking through water. The rest of the world seemed wavering and indistinct. Here, Magnus shoved the book into his hands. The paper was thin, covered in scrawled runes, but Magnus had taped a printout of the words, spelled out phonetically, over the incantation itself. Just sound these out, he muttered. It should work. Holding the book against his chest, Simon slipped off the gold ring that connected him to Clary and handed it to Magnus. If it doesn't, he said, wondering where his strange calm was coming from. Someone should take this. It's our only link to Clary and what she knows. Magnus nodded and slid the ring onto his finger. Ready, Simon? Hey, said Simon. You remembered my name. Magnus shot him an unreadable glance from his green-gold eyes and stepped outside the circle. Immediately, he was blurry and indistinct, too. Alec joined him on one side, Isabel on the other. Isabel was hugging her elbows, and even through the wavering air, Simon could tell how unhappy she looked. Simon cleared his throat. "I guess you guys had better go." But they didn't move. They seemed to be waiting for him to say something else. "Thanks for coming here with me," he said finally, having racked his brain for something meaningful to say. They seemed to be expecting it. He wasn't the sort who made big farewell speeches or bid people dramatic goodbyes. He looked at Alec first. "Alec? I always liked you better than I liked Jace." He turned to Magnus. "Magnus, I wish I had the nerve to wear the kind of pants you do." And last, Izzy. He could see her watching him through the haze, her eyes as black as obsidian. "Isabel," Simon said. He looked at her. He saw the question in her eyes, but there seemed nothing he could say in front of Alec and Magnus, nothing that would encompass what he felt. He moved back toward the center of the circle, bowing his head. "Goodbye, I guess." He thought they spoke back to him, but the wavering haze between them blurred their words. He watched as they turned, retreating up the path through the orchard, back toward the house until they had become dark specks, until he could no longer see them at all. He couldn't quite fathom not talking to Clary one last time before he died. He couldn't even remember the last words they'd exchanged. And yet, if he closed his eyes, he could hear her laughter drifting over the orchard. He could remember what it had been like before they had grown up and everything had changed. If he died here, perhaps it would be appropriate. Some of his best memories were here, after all. If the angel struck him down with fire, his ashes could sift through the apple orchard and over the lake. Something about the idea seemed peaceful. He thought of Isabel, then of his family, his mother, his father, and Becky. "Clary," he thought lastly, "wherever you are, you're my best friend. You'll always be my best friend." He raised the spell book and began to chant. "No!" Clary stood up, dropping the wet towel. "Jace, you can't! They'll kill you!" He reached for a fresh shirt and shrugged it on, not looking at her as he did up the buttons. "They'll try to separate me from Sebastian first," he said, though he didn't sound as if he quite believed it. "If that doesn't work, then they'll kill me." "Not good enough." She reached for him, but he turned away from her, jamming his feet into boots. When he turned back, his expression was grim. "I don't have a choice, Clary. This is the right thing to do." "It's insane. You're safe here. You can't throw away your life." "Saving myself is treason. It's putting a weapon into the hands of the enemy." "Who cares about treason or the law?" she demanded. "I care about you. We'll figure this out together." "We can't figure this out." Jace pocketed the steely on the nightstand, then caught up the mortal cup. "Because I'm only going to be me for a little while longer. I love you, Clary." He tilted her face up and kissed her, lingeringly. "Do this for me," he whispered. "I absolutely will not," she said. "I will not try to help you get yourself killed." But he was already striding toward the door. He drew her with him, and they stumbled down the corridor, speaking in whispers. "This is crazy," Clary hissed. "Putting yourself in the path of danger." He blew out an exasperated breath. "As if you don't." "Right, and it makes you furious," she whispered as she raced after him down the staircase. "Remember what you said to me in Alicante." They had reached the kitchen. He put the cup down on the counter, reaching for his steely. "I had no right to say that," he told her. "Clary, this is what we are. We're shadow hunters, This is what we do. There are risks we take that aren't just the risks you find in battle.